get back to the routine. I think it's the work in the cage and stuff like that. You know, early on, you know, I think it's, you know, easy to chase hits a little bit with a slow start, but, you know, just talking to some of the guys, you know, actually talking to Brandon Bell, he's like, you know, chase good at-bats instead, you know, so that was more of my focus. Obviously, defensively helps too, with just, you know, staying focused on that. And, you know, like I've said a million times, trying to, you know, win a ball game behind the plate and when you're scuffling is the best part about being a catcher too. So, so yeah, it's I think the consistency and the work.
That's Blue Jays catcher Dandy Jansen after a two-home run performance in a 7-0 win over the Chicago Blackhawks. What are you laughing
for? Well, there's a couple of things that stood out there. You know, practice does make perfect. So I do agree with him 100% there. I mean, it doesn't work for everybody, but it seems to now that he's refined who he is and he's very comfortable being a catcher and calling a game behind the plate and just, you know, he doesn't need anybody to walk up to him and go, hey, do it this way. You know, don't start out so wide. Don't give it away. Now he's sort of come into his own that way. Now he can spend a little bit more time in the cage. And then I thought it was a little funny that he walks up and asked Belt how to hit. I think that's a little funny.
Why?
The obvious answer would be his hasn't gotten off to the fastest of starts. So, and he's left-handed.
But I mean, the...
I get what you're saying is not everybody's.
I threw you a curve there. You thought I was going to just sort of nod and go along with you, right?
Not everybody is capable at the big league level to get off to a slow start. So give, you know, everybody around here, obviously Danny has sort of solidified himself as one of those guys that, mm-hmm. you know, can have a little time to figure some things out. And what he does offensively is, it's pretty special.
Okay, I want you to talk about that. I want you to talk about his stance, about how wide he is. But before we do that, I do want to bring up something we touched on Jay's talk yesterday, and the Jays won 7-0 against the White Sox. Eric Swanson, by the way, Jays reliever, scheduled to join us. What did I say?
I don't know. I wasn't listening.
Oh, well, you went White Sox. Did I call them Red Sox?
No, I said they stink. Okay.
Well, anyhow.
Sorry. I was listening, yes. Eric Swanson. We'll join.
Yeah.
11-10.
So Dandy Jansen had 15 home runs last year. Four of them came in a 6-game span between May 24th to June 1st. And on nine times he hit home runs in consecutive games. In other words, hit home run one game, hit a home run the next game, then go for a while without hitting a home run. Hit a home run, then hit a home run, then go for a while hitting a home run. Is that just... I asked you this last night. That's not the definition of a streaky.
Yeah. With all due respect
hitter,
to Danny, I don't think Danny's a great hitter. Danny has lots of power, and Danny is one-sided. One-sided means, you know, we saw him last night. He can shorten up a guy. He's facing, you know, he's not trying to do too much. He's just trying to punch a ball to right. He can do that, right? Mm-hmm. He's got enough confidence in his hands and his lower half to be able to let the ball travel just a little bit more. And just use his hands, right? He's not trying to do too much with it. He's not trying to get it out in front of the front leg to do damage or create backspin or anything like that. I didn't last night really know what you were trying to ask me.
He hits home runs in bunches is what I'm saying.
Well, home runs come in bunches.
Okay.
But I don't think Danny's a great hitter. There's a difference between being a power hitter and a great all-around hitter. Danny's not that, and that's okay. Like, Danny's hitting the bottom of the order for a reason. He's not a run producer, but he can for, like you just said there with those stats, about a 4 or 5 day span, he can carry your team for a little while, which is odd for a guy that hits in the eight hole.
Right.
Well, it's odd that a guy can come out
and get some giant hits like that and do it
with some crooked numbers, right?
If I'm not mistaken, last year John Schneider moved him into the cleanup spot or into the fifth spot for a couple of games, remember? When he was going, he moved him up. It was just a couple of games.
Yeah.
But, I want to get back to, we'll talk about Jose Berríos and Nate Pearson in a minute, because obviously the pitching was a big part of the story last night.
Are you on the bandwagon now? I know you tooting this, and you tooted this about 3 days ago that, you know, I'm all in.
Let's see what happens. I want to see them against Seattle. Chicago's a bad team. I know.
So
that
what? It's not their fault.
No, it's not their fault. But I want
to
see them.
Bad team?
I want to see them against Seattle. But I mean, I'm fine with the start. You have to be an idiot not to be fine with the starting rotation. I mean, you You just have to be the most pessimistic of pessimists. Talk to me about Danny's stance, though. And you were describing this before.
This is the first time I'm going to stand up. Now, obviously, that we're on TV a little bit, and I'm not sure anybody can even see that.
I don't know if this will work.
I'm going to try. But basically, and I'm going to try and do this and speak into the microphone, obviously, we're a radio show. Okay? This is what it's all about. But we are on TV, and the little red light's there, so I'm going to try and show this thing. And you could just tell, and basically I'm sort of crouched down. Obviously, the people are watching on TV. This is where Danny sort of starts his rotation, is really wide.
Almost as wide as when he's catching a pitch.
It's crazy when he starts wide anyway, and then he kicks his leg, and he's real wide. And why that's a big deal is – he wants to pull the baseball. So basically, you got to get the barrel out in front of the front leg. And to do that, your hands basically have to come right by your face. You know, he's not a big drop the back elbow, right, get it in way back here, because I just don't think he can. Because of his lower half, how wide it is, it's very hard for him to do this and try and actually get the barrel out front. He's trying to get it here because he wants to pull the baseball to left field. And it's very hard because I used to try and do this. Maybe not as much as Danny Jansen, as wide as he is when he starts his swing. But you got to be real good with your back foot of the rotation, because if you're not and it's lagging behind with your back leg, your hands tend to want to go out and around. And sometimes you see Danny look like a windmill. When he's going bad, it looks like he's almost jamming himself. Because his hands are not doing this, because he doesn't have good rotation from his backside, it's just very hard to do. You don't see too many people doing it. How did I do?
You did well.
That hurt.
I know. I really wanted to just kind of slide the chair when you were talking out of the way so that you'd sit down and fall down on the ground.
Just by me standing up there
it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And the emphasis he has to put on his back foot have good rotation.
Can you do that? Can you do that over 162 games when you're catching as well?
That's a great question. I mean, look, we started the show on purpose.
Yes.
By him saying he's practicing in the cage on things that he's doing between the lines when it matters the most. That's why I wanted people to hear that.
Yeah.
Is because now, to your question, absolutely. He's doing it in a cage. Like, it's something he feels comfortable with, and it's something that if his hands are working and following his back foot because of how wide he is, because he has lots of power and he's simplifying things, and, you know, he's not trying to fillet a ball to right. Occasionally he will if he has to, but it's turn and burn, and he is a two-hand finish guy, which sometimes two-hand finishes guys, when you're real wide like that, you tend to swing with your shoulders, right? It looks a lot like your shoulders are sort of windmillish. They're not getting extension, and your hands are not doing the swinging because you're so wide. So there's some things. It looks simple. Like, it just looks basically like he lifts it up, puts it down, turns. But as wide as he is, a lot of things have to go right. And you have to be tremendously strong to be able to do that. And he's got them big tree trunks for legs. Obviously, he squats all the time, and I'm sure that helps out a lot. But it's special. Like, I know he's not a great hitter. He's not going to hit 300. He's probably not going to hit 270. But if he hits 240 and – can he hit 20?
15 to 20 home runs. I'm taking that.
That's a really good year. Hitting the
defense,
eight hole.
And that defense.
And most of those could be maybe not solo shots, and you're hitting, you know, 14 or 15 of those could be three-run homers. I mean, that's
– it helps.
He's sort of come into his own, and he is what he is, I think, and kudos to him.
It helps when Whit Merrifield's hitting in front of you right now, too.
He's on base a lot, right?
He is. He absolutely is.
I hope I explained that well, and I know it's odd for me trying to do this on radio.
Well,
but we are a little on TV, but just by me being so wide and watching how your hands have to work, because you're basically losing your lower half.
Folks on the radio, it was like he was standing as wide as Jansen sometimes stands when he crouches for a pitch.
Yeah.
Which, you know, just sort of imagine trying to hit a baseball doing that.
It's hard. Got to be strong.
Against a right-handed.
Very strong.
You know, right-handed
hitter. That throw 100. Right.
Jose Berríos was terrific last night. A couple of things.
Would try and do that on radio.
Yeah, I know you would. The caveat with the White Sox is they're not a very good team.
They're not.
They're also a team that has given Jose Berríos trouble in the past. Seven innings pitched, four hits, no earned runs, obviously. Nine strikeouts, one walk, 103 pitches, 69 strikes. Kevin, I'm just going to give you some numbers. First inning, he hit 97.4 miles an hour to Jimenez, the fastest pitch he's thrown since joining the Blue Jays. 99th pitch of the game was 96 miles an hour, struck out Yasmani Grandel. He got 16 whiffs last night, seven in the change. That's out of 14 swings.
Threw his change to righties, too, which is the first time we've really seen that. He's had confidence in throwing it in after the sinker. It's a big-time pitch.
Two swings in the sinker, three in the slurve. Two whiffs on the sinker, three in the slurve, four whiffs on the four-seamer. That was, and I think it was Joe Siddle made the point during the telecast, it was a really well-balanced game in terms of pitch usage.
No question.
For Jose Berríos, right?
It's great that Joe Siddle noticed that, because I actually wrote that down for a reason. He threw 32 sinkers. He threw 25 changeups. He threw 23 slurves. He threw 23 four-seamers.
You got no idea what's
balance,
coming.
Right? Well, he's got to command those, or a good hitter will eliminate a couple of those and just hunt something that he thinks you're going to throw for a strike, something he can do damage on. It's real simple for me. He's throwing more strike ones. He's throwing harder. And dare I say, the spin rate on all of his pitches has went up. You know what that means? That means the thing's tunneling longer. It's harder to tell the difference between the four of them, which means one's breaking into a righty. Then the changeup that he throws a little, you know, I don't know what the mile per hour is, like 81, 82 miles an hour from the 94, 95 that he's that's a big difference for him, right? Everything that it takes for him to be good, you know, the turn of his start when he's standing on the mound, it just sort of locks in, sets sort of where he wants to go with his glove, his release point. Danny Jansen behind the plate has been elite early in the season.
Yeah, Danny Jansen made the point after the game yesterday, talked about what you just said, talked about his direction to the plate. The eye level. We talked about that. He looks so comfortable mechanically. He had some decent starts when he first joined the Blue Jays. But
Now I think predictability from him is getting a lot.
Right.
Like now you expect it.
Now
a Blue Jay from Jose Berríos?
When he first came here, when he first came here from Minnesota,
we were dreaming. How good it's going to look with everybody else. Yeah, absolutely.
He was consistent when he came over from Minnesota. Last year, I think we wondered. But the biggest thing for me with Jose Berríos right now is he's had games where he hasn't had as balanced an approach and he's had success. He's had games where he's had that balanced use of his pitches and had success. And to me, that suggests that if you're comfortable with your mechanics, when you do that, you're comfortable with your mechanics. When you can throw all your pitches and balance them out, you're comfortable with your mechanics.
We just heard Danny Jansen say that as a hitter. A pitcher's no different. For it to go where you want it to go, you have to be mechanically sound. You have to have good direction. We see Alek Manoah all the time, right? Falling off to the first base side. That's release point. That's you want that consistent over and over and over and over and over again, so you're able to go, away to a righty, into a righty. Like all quadrants of all of a sudden now, if Danny's setting up in a certain spot, he can actually throw it there with multiple pitches of his mechanics.
And
it's genius a little.
Cannot mention this enough. And I don't think it's coincidental. He has been a different pitcher since that at-bat with Randy Arozarena. It is remarkable.
Sure.
If you go back and look at that at-bat, he has been a different pitcher. He's been more convicted. We saw a little more emotion out of him last night on the mound. This is the guy they gave the contract to.
No question.
Be consistent. There are going to be days where you're going to give up four runs and we're going to have to score five. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
But be consistent. Give us seven innings or 6 2/3 or whatever, and we'll take that. 6 2/3 and a chance to win. And that's everybody in this rotation. You know, knock on wood, I don't want to jinx Kikuchi today. But everybody in this rotation now gives them a chance to win.
Yeah, and I think with the competition that they face, you can say that there's a good chance you're going to win this because of the way they're pitching. Like that's the ultimate goal here, right? Is you want that predictability of the opponent that you're playing because of who's on the mound for you. You think, man, if you just give the offense that first time through to figure out what the other guy's doing, good chance you're going to win that game.
Think about the things we've been talking about since early in the year. You know, we were talking about the starting rotation. We were talking about the lineup, still talking about the lineup, and maybe not coming through with runners in scoring position as much as you'd like. Bottom line, though, the Jays have won 14 of 20, and since April 4th, Tampa Bay obviously has been on fire since April 4th, but the Jays are right there with Baltimore and Pittsburgh in terms of record. I can't believe I'm saying that, Baltimore and Pittsburgh, but there we are, in terms of record since April 4th.
Yeah, look, they're doing all the things they should do against teams they're quite frankly should always beat. Like, I know it's sports and it's baseball, but they should sweep the White Sox. The White Sox aren't very good. Like, you have a decent start from Yusei Kikuchi today. He throws a few more strike ones with the way the slider cutter thing has been, the split change that he likes to throw, the velocity on the fastball, the mechanical changes that he's made. He just looks freer and easier because he just is not trying to force velocity. You know as well as anybody, and I know this for a fact, that when I was a player at the end of my career and I could tell that my bat speed wasn't there, I was trying to force it. When you force it, it gets worse, right? You tend to get tighter. You tend to, everything gets bigger and higher. Who's that look like? Yusei Kikuchi last year, right? Everything was, he was kicking the leg almost to his chin or past his chin. Now it's just, I'm going to raise it just enough because my hands are separated from my body and they're a little higher, that if I can get it from the glove to up to where I want to throw it and release it, I'm going to let it eat because I can. And that's sort of where they're at with their fifth guy, and that's kind of nice to watch, right? It's just not the first couple of guys now. It's all five of them.
107 is the first pitch today at the Rogers Center. It will, of course, be on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet. Gordon Beckham, White Sox TV analyst, former White Sox second baseman, joins us at 10:30. Joe Kelly, White Sox reliever and author of A Damn Near Perfect Game, expected to join us at 11:30, and Eric Swanson, Blue Jays reliever, will join us from the ballpark. Again, it is a 107 first pitch at the Rogers Center this afternoon. So govern yourself accordingly if you're going down to the game. Give yourself about 7.5 hours to get down.
I left at 7 o'clock and barely made it to work today.
Yeah, we don't talk about traffic in this show. We just don't, because it is a thing. It's like,
it's an awful thing.
No, it's just a thing. It's Toronto.
3 hours.
It's Toronto. It's Toronto. So Nate Pearson, 22 pitches yesterday in his first appearance. He didn't pitch here last. You know what? This is bizarre. I know he didn't.
He shouldn't have pitched here last
year. No.
Let's not lie about it.
First appearance since being called up. 22 pitch inning.
Tell it like it is.
97.8 average fastball. Hit 98. Might have hit 99, I believe, a couple times. 16 fastballs. 3 sliders. We saw the curve 3 times. He got a whiff on it. He got a called K to Andrew Benintendi. And Benintendi just kind of gave it one of those. I mean, it was obviously a strike. He just turned around and walked away. I don't know where Nate Pearson's velocity is going to finish, where it's going to average out.
Should always be that. It's a big enough guy. Figure it out mechanically to be that. If you want to be a big leaguer.
But, yeah. It
has to be that.
Leaving aside the velocity. That is the curve that we heard everybody talking about, that he was using at AAA, that he started to use in the Dominican Republic. What does that do for him? Let's assume that he settles in 97, 98, 99. Say that that's where we are with Nate Pearson. What does that curve do for him?
Well, look, it can get you some weak contact. It can get you some quick outs because you have to cheat to get to 98, 99. He's a big dude. Like, there's a lot of parts coming at a hitter, which would tell you, even you saw some decent hitters yesterday that he was facing that you could tell were geared up. Like, the hitter surprised them. You could tell that. Like, the hitter will tell you everything you need to know about it, what a guy looks like and how he feels. Never faced Nate Pearson, but I just know the size of him and how it comes out, and it's got a little extra gear. You can tell that. Even the ones they were taking, the hitter, the ones that he was missing, especially the ones that were up, you could tell they were thinking to themselves, I got to get this going. Even if that's in the strike zone, I got to think about catching this thing out front. It's got a little hair on it. Now, all of a sudden, if he can throw the breaking ball, which I'm not sure he can, I mean, it's – well, the jury's still out on these things, right? I mean, it's fun to watch him out there and because you could sort of picture what might be. But that, for me, is the turning point for him. I think now he's solidified his velocity, hopefully consistently. That is him. It ain't going to be 94. Ain't going to be Tim Mesa where one time it's 90, the next time it's 95. No, 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 no. He has to be 97, 98, 99, and occasionally, you know, every once in a while when he's just catching that thing perfect and it's got tremendous spin rate. Look at me talking spin rate. Spin rate off them fingers, it's 101. That's what
wearing,
I'm talking
you're
about.
You're wearing jeans, not khakis.
I am. So I think for me, what is the slider? Is it a big league pitch? I don't know. Like those, to me, that looks like they're non-competitive. I don't know what he's trying to do with them. I don't know when you'd throw it. So if I'm a hitter, just by me saying that, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not even going to try and hit the slow breaking ball. I'm going to get after the heater. So that was my point, right, is in big moments, that's why you see Jordan Romano come in flipping that slider like no tomorrow. Because sometimes you have to, right? I'm not saying you have to be married to it like Jordan is, but I'm saying sometimes you just have to come in and can he throw four or five breaking balls in a row? That'll be the question, right? And I think if he can, and if he can throw the slider for a competitive strike three pitch to a good hitter, say a left-handed hitter. We haven't even talked about can he get a really good lefty. I know he got
Benintendi.
I know he did, but you could tell Benintendi's like, oh, yeah, now I know that breaking ball looks like that. So this is what I'm saying. It's nice to see that. And I guess that getting his feet wet, I think his feet have been wet for a long time. I think now we start seeing the graduation of they're going to give him chances, Jeff. We had conversations on the field. We've heard it. They're gonna say, we want you. Like, you're a big dude. We're going to lean on you. We want to give you the ball. Go out there and show us you can do it. And for me, it's the two secondary pitches. Or if he's eliminated the slider, is it just the one secondary pitch? So it was nice to see him out there, and hopefully we see the graduation of the next Nate Pearson, whatever that would be.
Yeah, and he did hit – who did he hit with the pitch?
Andrus.
Yeah, he hit Andrus with the pitch.
Give Janie Jansen credit. And he comes right back with the breaking ball.
Right back with the breaking ball,
and
exactly.
Joe Siddle was all over it about – that's how you – when you lose release point, it's easier to throw a breaking ball because you have to force it out front and actually have you feel it that's snapping off and my release point is where it should be. Adrian, so good for Danny Jansen. That's what I said.
Adrian Martinez is. Always used to talk about using the curve as a pitch to correct his mechanics.
Yeah.
And he would have, when he was with Boston, he would have Jason Varitek. Jason Varitek had carte blanche to call a curve whenever he wanted. If he thought that he saw Pedro's mechanics were a little, didn't matter the count.
How just do you call, not hang a breaking ball? You got to get it out front, right?
Right.
If you don't snap it off, you get that cement mix and curveball, that's a good hit. And so, yeah, it's just little things like that from Danny.
It was the boys in the telecast also did a really good job last night. They pointed out, as Pearson was coming into the game, I don't know if you saw the Pete Walker and Danny Jansen were huddled, and I wonder what I'm sure one of the topics of conversation there was get him to use the breaking pitch.
Maybe
get him to use that breaking pitch. Don't shy away from it. He still threw 16 fastballs.
I mean, if those 99, it'd be a good start too. 99.
Yeah, but you know what? I would rather see what I saw last night. This is going to sound odd, than if Nate Pearson had come out and thrown 99 mile an hour fastballs plus guys. I needed to see that breaking pitch against a major league hitter. I needed to see it. And you're right. I'm sure next at bat with Andrew Benintendi, it's in Benintendi's mind now.
Sure.
He's a good hitter, but I needed to see that. I needed to see that. And yes, I know it was 7-0. We're not talking
1-0,
two men
on
in a 1-0 game and you're at Yankee Stadium. I get all that, but I'm not there with Nate Pearson yet. What I need to see from Nate Pearson is consistent velo and that breaking pitch. If I got that, then if he gives me that, he's on your team. He's cost somebody a job. There's somebody losing their job because of Nate Pearson being in the bullpen, losing their job because of Nate Pearson being here. Because that's enough for me to see it. I don't want to see him go down to the minors to work on anything anymore.
What does he need to work on?
He doesn't need to work. He needs to be in the major league bullpen. He just does. Period.
Well, he's either a big leaguer or a minor leaguer. Nate Pearson will tell us that one way or the other.
Yep. And last night was a great.
You like what you saw?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, I liked what I saw.
I like the 99. Not sure about the breaking balls, but that's
We'll see. We'll have that conversation.
Is this first outing? You could tell he was convicted. He didn't let the hit by pitch bother him, which he would have done the last time he was in the big leagues because he was trying to be a big leaguer. Now I think listening to him, and he doesn't talk a lot now. He thinks he is a big leaguer, which that is half the battle. Trust me, I didn't when I was in the big leagues. You got to believe you are a big leaguer before you are consistently a big leaguer, and maybe he's there.
The White Sox have lost six in a row. They're 7-17 overall this season. They haven't won a series this season. They're 0-7-1 in series play after last night's 7-0 loss. Yusei Kikuchi takes on Michael Kopech this afternoon. Gordon Beckham is a White Sox TV analyst. He's also the former White Sox second baseman. He'll join us next. We'll ask the question, what on earth is going on with the Shy Sox? Some people in this room had them going to the postseason. I'm not going to say who.
That wasn't me. Oh, yeah. Off air, I might have said that might be the team to look at, but I wasn't going to say it out loud.
Yeah, he said it. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your favorite podcast. Don't lie!
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I got Blue Jays tickets to give away. Which I will do in the 11 o'clock hour. Back leg line is open, 416-413-3959. Yeah, Joe Kelly scheduled to join us at 11:30. Be at the ballpark. Eric Swanson will join us as well, Blue Jays reliever.
Well, heavy show.
And it'll be like old home week for Eric Swanson. The Seattle Mariners come into town on Friday for a three-game series. Huh. Eric Swanson, of course.
Think he cares?
Right.
Player's not like that.
I don't know. I mean,
unless you've been there for 10 years.
How long was he there? He's a Yankee originally, right? Was he not? Yeah.
And did he pitch in the playoffs?
No, he didn't.
That's why you're not real sad about leaving there.
Yeah, yeah. Anyhow, we'll talk to him about he's a pretty good start to the year with the
split finger.
The Blue Jays, splitty plays, especially in a team that in a bullpen that doesn't have an awful lot of left-handed pitchers.
We got a little everything. Figure out.
And
kitchen sink, slider, split finger, sinker
and
from
he's
the lefty.
Clearly,
like you got a bunch of little everything.
Yeah, and it's pretty clear that the manager has a crap ton of confidence in him too.
Well, so. He's gonna have to.
Yeah, he has.
No he's got no choice.
Really. It's always good though when you have no choice.
And he's good.
And the guy's good, right? Where you don't want to find yourself is when you have no choice.
Yeah, get the
exactly.
ball and you got your fingers crossed behind your back.
Where you don't want to be is where you got no choice but to use the guy and he stinks. That's where you don't want to be. What do we say about the Chicago White Sox now? I mean,
they got some challenges. How's that?
I'm thinking back to what I thought of this team a couple of years ago. And I mean, I thought they were, I looked at the division and I just thought, man, the White Sox are going to be in the postseason for a long time. Their window of opportunity.
What you would think would give them an advantage
is wide open. They're 7-17 this year. They've yet to win a series. They will wrap up their series with the Blue Jays
That's
this afternoon.
Amazing.
It really is. Gordon Beckham. The White Sox TV analyst and former White Sox second baseman. Gordon, thanks so much for joining Kevin and myself today. It's great of you to take some time out. On a game day, I don't even know. 0-7-1 in series play. I didn't think they'd be 17-7, but I didn't think they'd be 7-17, Gordon.
Yeah, hey guys, sorry, you were going in and out a little bit. But yeah, I think that the start of the season here has just been one of those things for the White Sox where they just didn't expect to get out of the gates like this. I think that there's a lot of things that Pedro Grifol is trying to change in terms of just work ethic and the way that they go about their business on a day-to-day basis. And I think it's they were doing that very well in spring training, and now it's a little bit different. Like in the season, sometimes routines change, and I think that those changes haven't been good for the White Sox because they're kind of getting back into that old way of, like, it's the season now and we don't have to do maybe X, Y, and Z to be successful. And so I think that there's just some things that I think Pedro's having to work through. And obviously the guys are much more talented than they have shown to this point. And they're just not doing a few things well. I always think that you need to have either the offense and the starters going well or the offense and the bullpen going well. You can't have all three going bad at the same time. And right now, all three are kind of going bad at the same time. They're not hitting, they're not pitching, and then the bullpen's not shutting it down. And so when you have that going on, you're going to lose a lot of games, just like you're going to win a lot of games if you have all three going, which is kind of what Toronto has been. I mean, they've been hitting, they've been pitching pretty well, and then, you know, their bullpen, at least in our series, has come in and shut it down.
Well, we saw Robertson and Jimenez last night in the outfield sort of having communication issues. Is that sort of what you're talking about that they need to try and clean that part of it up? Because I got to be honest with you, Gordon, I don't know if I've ever really seen that. I've seen that maybe one time where that communication thing, you're on the road, right? That's a new park. You've never really played there before. And it's sort of you're having those communication issues. But that happened a couple of times. Is that sort of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, last year, Aloy was to Roberts left and left field, and then he had to have Andrew Vaughn in right field out of position just to get his bat in the lineup. So last year, they just basically told Robert to go catch everything, and he's got to be the kind of the bad news bears center fielder to make sure that, you know, it's everything is caught. And so this year he has Benintendi to his left, which Benintendi is obviously a very capable and good outfielder. But I think a little bit of that is kind of carryover from last year of him being told, hey, go get everything. Like, we don't have the best defenders around you, so we want you to catch everything you can. I think last night was definitely strange. Like, I think that it's got to be frustrating for Aloy to be there camped under a ball in basically dead right field and then have Robert come in front of him. So, you know, I think that it's being addressed. But it didn't look good to me either. I mean, I kind of said the same thing. I kind of laughed a little bit. And I'm like, you know what? It's not really funny. I said that onto the broadcast. You know, that's kind of the way that the White Sox look right now, unfortunately, is stuff like that's going on. And it's like, what is, you know, like, you're not playing baseball, like, good baseball. Like, and when you do something like that, it just kind of puts an exclamation point on that fact.
I think it also has to be pointed out, too, that they're currently without Moncada. They're currently without Tim Anderson. Of course, we all know that Liam Hendricks is coming back after successfully, you know, battling cancer, which will certainly be a tremendous lift for this team. But those are two pretty big three big personalities out of the clubhouse too, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously missed from the lineup. You can tell. But one of the things that I've been impressed about Grifol is that he doesn't like excuses, and so he would probably tell me to tell you guys that, like, just because they have a couple guys out, that doesn't mean they can't win ball games. And I think that that's one of the things he's really trying to instill in the group, that, hey, it doesn't matter who's on the mound, how good he is, who's out, who's playing, who's in the lineup. You've got to find a way to compete. And I think that there's some frustration from him probably because, hey, I mean, they just haven't looked very good. And it didn't look – last night I did feel like they just really let down. And I feel like they weren't even competing the right way last night. I think that I think it should be addressed, and I think that, you know, it's easy to give effort and compete and act like you're in it. Last night, the White Sox weren't in it from pitch number one.
You mentioned Luis Robert, and you know, everything I'd heard about him, he's a five-tool guy. He looks very athletic. He robbed the home run from Chapman a couple of nights ago, which is a big deal. But I'm looking at his numbers, Gordon, and he's 2 for his last 28, and he's 8 for his last 61. If you're a five-tool guy, now everybody goes through struggles, right? 8 for 61 is a pretty big size struggle. Can you point your finger on what that might be?
I think that there's some approach thoughts. I mean, it's always been see ball, hit ball for him. And I think that because of that, you know, that and you know, it's like that for a lot of hitters. I'm sure you can understand, you know,
sure.
You know that, Kevin. I mean, like, you come up to the big leagues, and a lot of times Like, I didn't have an approach for like 7 years of my big league career. I can't even believe that, you know, I'm saying that now. But like, yeah, I didn't even know what that meant. And I think that sometimes, sometimes Robert just doesn't have, you know, an approach, and he just tries to see ball, hit ball, and the anxiety and the stress of the moment kind of gets out in front of him. I think when he's good, he's as good as anybody in the big leagues. I've seen him do that. And, you know, when he's bad, you know, he's flailing because he doesn't have that approach. He doesn't have that approach to fall back onto where he can just say, all right, come hell or high water, I'm going to sit right here, and this is going to be my thought process, and I'm going to go down swinging with this approach. Like, I don't feel like there's that. So right now he's kind of showing the worst of what he can be. And when it's going good, he's obviously showing the best of what he can be. So, yeah, it hasn't been, so far a really good vintage of Robert. And hopefully he'll get it turned around. I know that all the guys, all the coaching staff in terms of the hitting staff, I mean, they're working on it daily. And you know how that goes, too. I mean, sometimes it just starts to snowball, and you're like, you know, you start losing, you have bad at-bats, and then next thing you know, you're having a lot of conversations, and when you're having to have a lot of conversations in baseball, it generally means you're not going very well.
I'm intrigued about what you just mentioned about the approaches at the plate, because I was that way. I always had to look heater, right? I wasn't good enough to go up and sit and guess breaking ball, because I just couldn't make a living. I didn't think off of hitting a breaking ball. It's very hard to do that. It would be one-sided, and I tried to use the entire field. But because of velocity, Gordon, and the way guys that can throw hard use the breaking ball, do you think there's more guessing in the game now?
Yeah, sometimes it seems like that, honestly. But I don't know. I mean, I probably should ask that next time I'm in town with them. Is there more guessing? I was the same way as you. I had to look fastball or else I was going to be late, and I could generally hit breaking pitches that were in the zone. That was my approach. And then later in my career, when I actually got a decent approach, I was trying to hit a one-hop line drive at the second baseman. That came on later in my career. But I do think that – I think also, Kevin, that the stuff is just stupid.
Crazy.
Stupid good. I mean, compared to – from when I came in the league in 2009 and then when I left in 2019, it really changed. I mean, it was a completely different ballgame in terms of stuff. Everybody has nasty stuff now. There's, like, nowhere to hide. It's not like you're getting a long guy that throws 90 miles per hour with a straight fastball. Everybody's got great stuff. And it's not easy to like hit anymore. That's number one, because the stuff is just a lot different and better.
What should we look for Michael Kopech today?
So Michael, you know, he's kind of been a little bit Jekyll and Hyde this year. Like every once in a while he'll come out and he's unhittable. And then every once in a while it looks like he's like kind of feeling for it and not sure of himself, and he'll give it up. So I think that if you see a confident Michael at the start of the game, it's, going right at hitters and attacking the zone, then he'll probably have a good day. If you see a guy that's feeling for it and trying to find it a little bit, then look for the Blue Jays to do what they have been doing and take care of the White Sox.
Gordon, really good of you to join us today. Thanks so much, man.
I learned something. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Appreciate it, guys. See you later.
Thank you. That's Gordon Beckham. He is a White Sox TV analyst. 107 is the first pitch today at the Rogers Center. The Jays lineup is as follows. It's just been released by the Jays. George Springer's leading off in right field. Bo Bichette is at shortstop and hitting second. Vladdy's at first. Chapman's in the cleanup spot at third. Varsho is in the fifth spot.
Ooh.
Center field. Kirk is in the sixth spot. Merrifield seventh. Jansen behind the plate eighth. Santiago Espinal at second base, hitting ninth, and Yusei Kikuchi on the mound.
No Biggio.
Mm. So Espinal getting the start despite that hand injury that looked at the time when he was hit by that Gerrit Cole pitch.
Kopech throws really hard, and Dalton Varsho the last couple of games anyway, you can tell, is really, I mentioned this a couple of days ago about when you stride separate, and that's your lemonade in the lower half, and you become very handsy. When you come very handsy, you got to be great at rotation. You can't be pushing the front hip when you make a positive move towards the pitcher. Right now, that's what he's doing. And you can tell when he sort of makes contact, his back leg is straight. That's a push. And that for me is sort of one of those things. Can he continue? You ask about Danny Jansen. Can he do that wide thing? Well, it's working for him. He has a lot of confidence in doing it. Why would you go away from it? The question will be with Dalton, if he continues to do this and miss heaters that he should be, quite frankly, hammering. The age that he is, the bat speed that he has, if you got a little thing going wrong with your mechanics, you should still be hammering that thing foul somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, you should be all over it. He's not even close to him. It'd be intriguing if that continues to happen. Would he adjust? Not saying you go away from it, but adjust what he's doing with his lower half. Like, they, because you can tell they're in between it, right? It was a leg kick. His dad came on and said he stunk with it. He didn't know how to do it. How do you start it? You know, it's his words, not mine.
Yep.
So they eliminated that. And then they went to the stride separation. It's a hard thing to consistently do with dudes that elevate with velocity because, again, your barrel's playing catch up if you're not really good with everything with your lower half. So it's a game of adjustments. How many bad games would it take for him to make an adjustment? That's the thing, right? They are obviously sticking with him. They're not going to put him in a seven hole. No. It's either going to be fourth or fifth. And if you're hitting in one of those two spots, you're supposed to be a run producer. He's getting a lot of opportunities. So that'll be an interesting thing to see about with him. I know we talked to him and he doesn't seem to, you know, be too worried about where he's at, but
I think it's the fact the team is winning makes that whole process a little easier for him, and a little easier, frankly, for a lot of players. Because I mean, there are guys that are what we've seen. I think in the past week is you're starting to see a little more of Vladdy. You're starting to see George Springer get rewarded for a lot of good. Listen. Luck plays a role. Luck plays a big role in this game. And you know, George Springer, you saw his reaction yesterday when he got that little single. It was like, you know, he just broken an incredible offer, and it was just his numbers weren't that good, but he was making good contact. I mean, think of a couple of series. Think of the Yankee Stadium, the series against the Yankees in Houston. He was making contact right at guys. So you're starting to see guys get results for stop. And the biggest thing is they're just hitting the ball hard. And I still think if you're hitting the ball hard, good things are going to happen at some point.
Okay, last seven games, Dalton Varsho's 3-for-his-last-28 with 9 strikeouts. Last 15 games, he's 7-for-56 with 14 strikeouts. That's not good enough. Like, again, he's hitting in the meat of the order. And you when you struggle, it should look like Springer. Springer's hitting balls hard at people, just missing those fly balls he's hitting in Houston. Those are outs. I mean, I know what they're saying.
Yeah.
Those are outs.
But,
like, he's not hitting the ball hard enough. If he was, that'd be a homer or a double. So, but he is hitting the ball hard enough that he can stick with his approach, whatever that is. If he's an ambusher, if he's setting curveball, if he's working on something in the cage with his mechanics, like, he can stick with that. I'm saying Dalton, is he doing that? The punch-outs, the strikeouts will tell you no. The competitive at-bats that he's not having will tell you that maybe he tweaks. I don't know. Maybe it's he raises his hands higher. Maybe chokes up more. I don't know. I'm guessing here with what. Maybe he uses a heavier bat. Maybe he uses a lighter bat. Sometimes early in the season, that can help. When you're not catching up the velocity, instead of using a heavier bat, you use a lighter bat. Like, it's just little things that can help you. Point of contact. Mechanics add up to, where am I making contact? And if I'm swinging under a baseball, maybe I raise my hands higher, I use a lighter bat, I can stay on top of that, and instead of me swinging through it, maybe I'm fouling it straight back, or I'm hitting a line drive to right field, which will give me confidence and it'll carry forward, and I'll be the Dalton that everybody expects me to be. So I've been there. That's what it is, right? You go to the cage, you suffer through things, you're trying to figure it out, and I know he's trying to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing we know, one of the things we really know about John Schneider is he rewards performance, and he must, he's also loyal. He's as much as said this when it comes to second base. I mean, he's given himself about a month to 5 weeks to kind of just see what was real about spring training, what wasn't real about spring training, what works, what doesn't work. And I think this is part of the thing with Dalton Varsho, right?
Yeah,
that's
Do they have another option?
Well, okay. Obviously, that. Let's face it. If Brandon Belt had gotten off the great start, we probably wouldn't be having this discussion, and Varsho would be hitting sixth. But my point is that as long as the team is winning, John can do this. He can give you can give guys a little extra leash, especially guys you know you're going to need this year. Like at some point, Dalton Varsho, you're going to need him. You got to hope Dalton Varsho wins a couple of games for you, right? So you got to give him.
He has already. He's a really good defender, which helps. So you can tell he doesn't carry it, and we've talked to him. Like you can tell he's not going to carry it from one side to the other. Like his defense is not going to suffer because he's six for his last 56. Yeah. Like that's not going to happen. But there is one of those times where I hit in the meat of the order. There's a bunch of dudes on base when I'm coming to at bat. The at bats need to get better. How do I fix it?
Kevin, I can't get over how good. I'm not surprised because it's one of the reasons they got Varsho. I can't get over how good this outfield defense looks. And it's not just, I'm not talking about highlight plays necessarily or highlight catches, just things like last night, that line drive that was hit to George, who hit it to Springer, just the lack of drama out there, the throwing to the right base, I'm not saying making great athletic spectacular plays, just
don't be yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Very professional. I got this. And again, I keep getting back to Springer and right field, man. Just
sure.
The right decisions are almost always being made by this outfield. What game was it? The first game of this series where Kiermaier went for a diving catch, missed it? No, I think it was against the Yankees. But Varsho was right behind him. That wouldn't have been the case last year. Varsho's right behind him, mm-hmm. and damage is limited. And that's one thing we've seen from this outfield is damage is really being limited. And I expected this to be the case because the Jays told us this was going to be the case, but it's a big change.
Maybe there's a reason why the pitching all of a sudden has gotten off to a hot start. Because what do? When you know all them dudes are making the plays? And by the way, have we talked about Bo's defense lately?
It's amazing, hey?
How about that? The point is how much easier it would be if I'm on the mound, and every time a ball goes in the air, a ball's on the ground, and they're out, I'm pounding zone. I'm not walking anybody.
But
maybe they go hand in hand.
I've made this point about Bo, and I really do believe this. Bo can be a streaky fielder if there's such a thing. And there are times where he goes in funks, and then all of a sudden he'll go 15 games without mm-hmm. it. I don't know, 15 games without an error, but you know what I mean?
Sure.
He'll go in a run of games where we don't notice him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we're, you know, knock on wood, we're in that stage right now.
Yeah.
With Bo. Yeah, I don't want my cell phone to fall. We're in that stage right now with Bo. So
mm-hmm. I know he works hard. He's the first one there taking ground balls, and it's not lack of effort, and it's more throwing. And you see the footwork, and you see when he takes it's the simple little thing, the people that I've talked to about when he changes grip to throw it to that he wants to throw
it's a
it
fascinating
to.
Discussion.
You do it in the glove instead of trying to do it up by where you're trying to release it, which is sometimes when he gets in trouble. So you see him when he catches it and he's on the run, he's gripping it in his glove before he takes it out of his glove. It's a small thing, but it's something that they work on because they know that if he just has a decent throw because of the way Vladdy is fielding his base around the bag over there, and he's better and he's more athletic and he's in a better position to, you know, field a bad throw, they're going to get most of those people out. So, yeah, it's almost like whenever we see it, they've already seen it times two.
Yeah.
And they're working on it, and they're going to fix it. And that's what you're seeing here, right, is they're not trying to give other teams extra outs.
Defense last night, you know, we didn't mention Danny's block two pitches, one of which could have undone an inning, and Vladdy at first base making, it doesn't surprise me anymore,
mm-hmm.
the scoops that Vladdy makes, but no, it is noticeable. It is noticeable. The proper decisions are being made.
It is.
And
even when the outfielders leave their feet on balls they're supposed to leave their feet on, how it's on time.
Yes.
All the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy, right?
It's really good. You know, hopefully we didn't jinx them. Joe Kelly is a White Sox reliever. He's also a published author. He'll join us. Eric Swanson as well. It's Blair and Barker. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan of Sportsnet 360.
breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
107 is the first pitch this afternoon at the Rogers Center. Blue Jays looking to sweep the Chicago White Sox. Joe Kelly of the White Sox joins us at the bottom of the hour. And Mr. Barker and myself will be doing Blue Jays talk this afternoon. So give us a call after the game. If you're in the car or stuck in traffic or on the subway, I don't even know. I guess you can waiting for your subway train, waiting for your GO train, whatever. Give us a call immediately following the game. There'll be, you say, Kikuchi against Michael Kopech. There'll be some serious velo in this game. I think Kikuchi's fastball is this year's average is third fastest among major league left-handers. Huh?
He throws like he's mad at you.
He does.
Which is nice. Yeah. You got it. Throw it.
We are giving away tickets to see the Blue Jays all season long here on Blair and Barker, whether you listen on the radio or on our podcast. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question. 595 nights. All you have to.
Simple.
Could not be easier. Yesterday's question and answer was, after back-to-back Cy Young winning seasons, the Blue Jays traded Roger Clemens to the Yankees in 1999. Who was the infielder acquired in the deal? It was Homer Bush. Got that like that.
I bet he didn't like you either.
He did. Oh, Homer liked everybody.
Except you.
No, he liked me. Today's question, this guy liked me. Today's question to win tickets to see the Jays and Yankees down at the Rogers Center on May 17th.
For a little while, anyway.
No, he liked it.
For just a little while.
We had some similar. Anyhow, this Blue Jays pitcher started a career high.
What's wrong with you?
This Blue Jays pitcher started a career high 34 games and led the American League with 231 strikeouts in 2008 before signing with the Yankees again. This Blue Jays pitcher started a career high 34 games and led the American League with 231 strikeouts in 2008 before signing with the Yankees. Text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. And again, these are tickets to see the Jays and Yankees at the Rogers Center on May 17th.
It's amazing that I'm still a decent guy.
Huh?
Hanging out with you as long as I've hung out with you. A fact.
What could possibly have changed in the last 2.5 minutes? Like, what could have changed? Man. What did I say or what did I do in the last 2.5 minutes?
I've seen this guy, the answer to that question,
yeah,
at his best.
And I've seen him at his worst.
I've seen him at his best.
But my definition of seeing him at his worst probably doesn't quite match your definition.
I will say he's the best teammate I've ever had.
Now, you said that. And
I'm going to give it away. He's been on this show.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'll take your word for it. I just said he was just a dude I enjoyed covering. I just did. Didn't mean he was a nice guy all the time. He talked to you all the time, but he enjoyed covering him. It was a challenge.
He's moody.
It was a challenge. It was fun.
Performance driven.
It was fun. Same thing with JD. With Donaldson.
That's well said.
It's the same thing. I mean,
oh,
just,
no question.
They're, you know.
Whenever he was talking to me and you knew he coming off a 4-for-4 with a homer.
It's funny how you couldn't find him when he was.
Yeah, with the boombox in his back pocket.
Yeah, you couldn't find him. Anyhow. The Jays will play the White Sox this afternoon. 107 is the first pitch. We're very pleased to be joined by Blue Jays reliever Eric Swanson from the Rogers Center. Eric, thanks so much for joining Kevin and myself.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Sorry, Barker just gave me a look like I said something
stupid.
Like
you forgot my name or something.
No, I said Kevin. Yeah, I apologize. The show's gone off the rails early today. Usually it doesn't go off the rails till
early
the last
games
half hour.
Hurt us.
Eric, I wanted to ask you, you know, we've talked a lot about how this rotation has kind of fallen into place for this rotation now. And I'm just wondering, guys in the bullpen, is there a different mood in the bullpen when the rotation has got it going on compared to times where, you know, things may not be as consistent? Is it the guys have a different approach? Do they watch the game differently? Do they prepare differently?
Yeah, I mean, I think it gives everybody kind of a sense of relaxation for sure. When you have a starting rotation that's been thrown as good as ours has right now, it just kind of allows everybody to kind of take a deep breath and, you know, be able to sit back, watch the game, enjoy it for a little bit. And then once that fifth inning rolls around, everybody starts kind of getting ready to go no matter what. And whatever happens from there happens. But, yeah, it's been pretty enjoyable to be able to watch what our rotation's been doing here this last couple weeks.
I've always wanted to ask you about the split finger. Do you know when it's going to be good? When you're in the pen and you let one eat, right, it's because you're throwing it a tick harder early in the season than you were last year. Do you know when you're throwing it in the pen that, man, good luck hitting that thing?
I would like to say, yeah. Sometimes I'll be throwing it in the pen and it'll be great, and I go in the game and it sucks. Or it could be vice versa. I'll throw it in the pen and it sucks. I go in the game and it's best it's been all year. I would like to say for the most part that it's pretty consistent. I have a pretty good feel for it right now, especially coming out off of the last couple of years, throwing it and really kind of getting in the groove with it. But there's some days definitely where I feel like it's a little bit better than others.
Yeah, we talked to Kevin about that, and he mentioned that he needs the little separation between that pitch and his fastball. Are you sort of the same way, right? It's the when I throw a fastball, I turn around, I see that I like where the number's at. Now, if I throw my split finger because of that tunnel and that late break, that it should break the way it's supposed to break.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's kind of why I started throwing that pitch, is to have that separation from my fastball. And I kind of know number-wise what it's supposed to be at as far as separation. So, you know, now there's certain places throughout the league that have all the analytics that are up on the board. And so, yeah, there'll be times where I throw it and I hit on it and I'm like, okay, that's where I need it to be today. And it's kind of a good starting point.
Eric, we're going to see a guy start today, Yusei Kikuchi, who's coming off a difficult season. He's really, he hit the ground running in spring training, and he just seemed to carry it over. You know him a little bit from Seattle, I believe. Are you surprised? I'm not going to ask if you're surprised, because you've probably seen him at his best, but what tells you when he is at his best?
You can just kind of watch him go. I mean, from inning one, you can almost guarantee if he's going to be on. You know, I've played with Yusei, played with him when he was an all-star. We all know what he's got in there, and it's fun to see him stay consistent with it this year. I know he had a little bit of a rough one last year, and to me that was the surprising thing was last year for him. And I think you've seen him kind of shelf last year way back in the back of the closet, and he's going out and he's doing what Yusei does.
Eric, what's the toughest thing about not having a certain inning that you always know you're going to pitch in?
It doesn't bother me too much. I'm a guy that kind of gets ready to go around the fifth inning every day, no matter what, so I can be ready to go pretty much those last three, four innings of the game. It's just finding that routine that gets me ready whenever I need to be ready. Whenever they call my name, you know, it doesn't matter if it's the seventh inning, doesn't matter if it's the ninth inning. My job is to go put up zeros and help us win big ball games.
Now, we've talked to visiting players about sort of the new configuration at the Rogers Center, the bullpen, the access fans have to relievers. The Tigers weren't. Tigers relievers took a while to get used to it, shall we say. I'm kind of waiting to see what happens when the Red Sox roll into town. What's it like for Jays relievers? Like, what's the atmosphere like down there, the atmosphere created by fans and just the way the bullpen is designed now?
Yeah, I love it. Us as a group, we go out and we sit up top for the first full inning. We watch our starter roll out in the first inning, and then we watch our bats go in the bottom half. And after that's over with, we usually go down underneath and just kind of hang out, watch the game from down there. But I love it. I think it's a great kind of fan experience, being able to engage. I'm sure different relievers coming from visiting cities have different opinions on it, but I've always thought that was one of the cool things about the game, is when you go to places and fans are able to interact, whether that's positive or negative, but I've always enjoyed it.
Eric, is there a certain person that you might go to when the split finger's not working? I'm sure it's a – I don't know if that's a grip it and rip it pitch. I know you've talked about that, you know, you have your grip. You know if it's coming out right, it should go where it should go, and I should get swing and miss when I'm supposed to get it. But is there a certain person, you know, Kevin Gausman on the team, he likes the split finger. Do you ever have a conversation with him? Is there somebody else that you could go to that say the state's just not working? How can I fix it?
Yeah, I've had a few conversations with Gausman about it. For me, it's an effort thing. It's a grip it and rip it. It's just kind of getting a feel for it. I like to throw mine a decent amount in my throwing program. Just kind of a consistency thing. But, yeah, Gausman would definitely be one guy that I'd go with.
Awesome.
The Seattle Mariners are coming in town this weekend. You were, of course, with the Mariners last year. You were acquired in the trade, a trade for Teoscar Hernandez. I remember talking to you at the time of the deal. I mean, I think it's safe to say that your season in Seattle didn't end the way you'd wanted it to, or the way the Mariners wanted it to, frankly. What's it going to be like facing your former teammates, you know, this early in the year?
Yeah, it'll be cool. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun to see some of those guys that I've played with over the last 4 years for sure. Looking forward for them to come into town. I think that that'll be a pretty good series, especially obviously after what transpired at the end of last year. But, you know, we're coming off of a good stretch here and taking it into today, last game against the Sox. So it'll be good to bring some good baseball into that series for sure.
Now, as someone who grew up in Manitoba, I always have an affinity for folks who were born in North Dakota. And I'm just wondering if you could tell us a bit about your journey from Fargo, North Dakota, to the majors. Now, I know that North Dakota has produced some major. I think Darren Erstad, if I'm not mistaken, is from North Dakota, and Roger Maris as well. But just tell us a bit about your journey. I know you left there when you were 5 years old, but just tell us a little bit about that and sort of what North Dakota means to you. And I think you got a summer place up around the lakes, don't you?
Yeah. So yeah, I moved away when I was younger, bounced around a little bit. I lived in Minneapolis for a while. I lived in Indiana for a while. And I went to high school in Cincinnati, Ohio. And then once I got into pro ball, I decided I wanted to move back to North Dakota, and I'd been there for the last 8 years or so. And then actually building a home up in northern Minnesota with my wife right now. We're going to take the move and go up there, way, way north, about 12 miles from the Canadian border. But, yeah, my in-laws have a cabin on Lake of the Woods.
Yeah.
In Buffalo, Canada. So they're actually on the Canadian side, so.
Yeah, I know the area well. Listen, we appreciate you doing this, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah, good luck.
Keep it going.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Take care. Eric Swanson, there you go. And I know just by looking at his Wikipedia, his father played college football for the North Dakota State Bison. So there you go. It's a North Dakota thing.
Sure.
That's cool, though. So I know that we spoke to one of, I think it was Ryan Divish, we spoke to from one of the Seattle writers, and was saying that he's a big fisherman, and he's got a place up in the lake in the woods. And, I mean, if you're... Mm-hmm. If you live in Winnipeg and you got money, you buy a place. You buy a summer place in the Lake of the Woods. So that is kind of cool. He's lefties are 1-for-14 against him this year, and yeah, he's so important. We talked about this bullpen other than Tim Mesa doesn't have a lefty, but it's got guys that can get lefties.
Yeah, it's the elevated fastball. He's got a little extra gear to it, at least early in the season. Now, can he maintain that all season? Who knows? We'll see about that. He's throwing his split finger a little bit harder, which I think that'll tunnel a little bit longer. It's harder to tell the difference between the two, which is a big deal. That would mean that thing's breaking later, which you'll get more swing and miss. That just makes it a little – I talk about this all the time with John Schneider, the manager. He needs no-brainers. And if you got a guy that you don't have to worry about, you know, here's the pocket and it's two righties and a left. Every once in a while, you just got to say gloves off. It's this inning. He got really good stuff. Go out there and get him out. And I think maybe they're starting to feel that way about Eric. Like the split finger plays. He throws enough of the slider to keep a righty honest. You know, he'll try and backfoot that occasionally to a left-hander, but occasionally earlier in the count, maybe we'll strike two and try and get another swing and miss with the slider to a righty. He'll throw that. but it's the fastball up. He throws it hard enough, and the split finger down, and the tunneling off the fastball with the split finger. He's got good stuff, and you can tell he's not afraid. He got a little attitude. You play in the American League East, you got to go to Yankee Stadium, you got to go to Boston, you got to go to that in Tampa where it's not a very nice place to play. You got to have a little attitude. He got a little of that, and that helps too, I think.
Yeah, we've talked about how apparent it was just early in the year how important his role was going to be with this team. Because I think a lot of when the trade was made, I think a lot of, and Adam Mack was also a minor league pitcher who came over from the Mariners. A lot of people kind of looked at it and thought, I mean, he's not
well,
a guy going to come
pockets.
Yeah,
with him, and that's the way they need another guy with pockets. That they, you know, that just puts more pressure on a manager to always make the right move. Can't
right.
do that all the time.
No, but then after you've seen the way John Schneider uses him, and you've seen the confidence they have in him. Dan Duquette used to have a line about players graduating to responsible positions in the bullpen. And I always used to say, so what are you saying that you got guys in the bullpen who aren't responsible? He said, no, when I say responsible positions, I'm talking about positions of greater importance. Like you're given more responsibility.
Mm.
And I think Eric Swanson is a guy who has been given more responsibility. And quite frankly,
yeah.
I think he's a guy whose role may grow.
Okay.
This bullpen.
If you get you a legit eighth inning guy, no matter who's hitting, he's got the eighth inning. You got Romano in the ninth inning. You got two hybrids in Garcia and Swanson in the sixth and seventh. You can mix and match with them all you want in the playoffs. Rolling in and the way your rotation is, and all of a sudden, because you wouldn't need five starters, you could put Yusei Kikuchi in the pen instead of your lefty throwing 94.
Kevin, and,
you could
and
have
I'm
a guy
gonna
throwing
mention,
97.
I'm going to mention the name again. If Chad Green is healthy?
Until we hear... But you did hear a little bit of that he is getting closer.
Yeah.
So that could help too. So there's sort of, you can see that if they just went out and made that one move, it's sort of like on the offensive side. If they just went out and sort of either got an on-base guy who could hit the other guy's best pitch, put him in the two-hole and put Bo Bichette in a cleanup spot, and all of a sudden that sort of moved other people in spots where they could be their best.
Yeah.
Now your lineup's longer, and you wouldn't put so much emphasis on the back end of your lineup. Now all of a sudden, just by making one move there, one move in your bullpen, I mean, now you're cooking. But I don't know how you argue with what he's done so far. He's been really good. He's done everything. That's why I ask about the routine. And you could tell he's had to think about it. He's had to work through it.
Yes.
To where, and John Schneider's very good about giving him a heads up, and Petey's the best at that, to where we're going to, if it rolls around because of the way we used Jimmy Garcia yesterday, you could get it early. That means the fifth. That could mean the sixth. So be ready.
You brought up the point about the playoffs, and as you were talking, I was just, you know, I think sometimes people wonder when we say this bullpen is good enough to get to the playoffs, we're not certain if it's good enough to win a world championship. And people kind of scratch their head and go, you know, what do you guys mean? And this is kind of the way I view it right now. The way things seem to be falling into place. First of all, starters innings pitched, limiting the number of times your relievers are used in the regular season. That's hugely important because when you get in the playoffs, you can abuse guys in the playoffs. If somebody's hot, can abuse them in the playoffs because you're going to win and they ain't going to complain.
You can flip a starter in the pen and abuse him.
Exactly. Or, you know, conversely, if you've got a good, you can give Eric Swanson, even if you've got a better bullpen, you can give him a pocket in the, something happens. You give him a pocket in the eighth inning, or you know what happens in the postseason as well? You get extra inning games, right?
What?
So there you go. You've got a guy who can get left-handers out and a guy who's got a good enough fastball that you can throw him out in one of those, in a high leverage situation. But if you look at the combination of, let's play the let's just say game. Let's just say that Nate Pearson stays, and Nate Pearson is good enough that he graduates into some sort of role like that. Let's say Chad Green gets healthy. I mean, all these things are possible. It's entirely
closer.
Possible. Say Chad Green is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Say Yusei Kikuchi ends up being moved, not because he scuffled, but because you only need four starters.
A need.
You know, and then maybe at the deadline, you go out and add another guy. Like, you can – it's not
that far, I don't think, to look at this bullpen and say it could jump up from being good enough to get you there to good enough to win. I don't think we're as far as we may have thought we were coming out of spring.
Managers in the playoffs, because I've talked to Dusty about this before. Dusty wanted a guy that you can go from the ninth inning to the sixth inning, not from the sixth inning to the ninth inning. There's a huge difference. If I got my ninth inning guy, I got my eighth inning guy. Now me, the khakis, my pitching coach can all stand over there and pocket up as many dudes as possible to get it to the eighth inning guy. That all of a sudden makes a manager look like an absolute genius. Mm-hmm. That's the point. Because you're facing elite lineups. You're not facing the Reds. Or the Pirates, no offense, who are in first. Are they still in first place? But the point is, you're facing the elite guys, right? So you want to make sure that you got the ninth inning taken care of, the eighth inning taken care of. But if you're a manager and you're trying to pocket everybody but the ninth inning guy, it'll look like it looked last year. And then you'll have the manager coming out next year and saying, I should have let the starter in longer. It's a fact.
Yeah.
Like that's the reality of this whole thing is. This is the conversation that they're having, right? Is you just add one guy. Now, all of a sudden, it makes everybody's job easier, including the players.
Joe Kelly will join us in a few minutes as we get you set for Blue Jays baseball this afternoon. 107 is the first pitch, but we got some time. Let's visit. Let's check out the back leg line at 416-413-3959. That is a number to call. Leave a voice note for Kevin Barker. Question, comment, suggestion.
Huh? Is it a note?
Well, it's called a voice note. It says, leave us a voice note on TV. Leave us a message.
I'm asking.
Leave us a voice message.
Well, if it says it there, it must be right. I just thought you messed it up by saying it.
You have no faith in me. Jim and Hamilton called the voice note line and had a voice note for Kevin Barker.
To see Danny catching a day game after a night game is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what that relationship then is between Kirky and Kikuchi as a pitcher-catcher combo. Your thoughts. Have a good day.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's an easy one. That's an easy one. I'll give you the answer right here real quick. He was 3-for-4 with 2 homers. That's why he's playing. Simple.
And he got an off day tomorrow.
Matt Manger. 3-for-4 with 2 homers. That's why. Period. It's got nothing to do with Yusei Kikuchi now has graduated. He knows himself well enough. I mean, he's not going to hurt. 3-for-4 with 2 homers.
And what,
that's
3 homers in his last 4 games or something like that as well.
That's why he's playing a day game after a night game. Let's not overthink it. And I get your point, which is a great point, because he has been almost borderline elite getting dudes through games, and it's not going to hurt. Because, you know, after not throwing strike one, because that's been his little thing all year, it's sort of 49%. That's not good enough. League average is like 60%. That needs to get better. So when you're falling behind, you need that calming force behind the plate. That's not going to hurt. But he's 3-for-4 with 2 homers. That's why he's playing today.
Yeah.
You'd be crazy not to play him. Nuts. Who's DHing today?
Kirky, I do believe. I think I gave you the...
There you go.
I think I gave you the lineup. I think that's obviously the reason. Jano's doing what he needs to do, what you want him to do offensively right now, and you just ride that. And again, you do have You do have the off day tomorrow too. You do have the off day tomorrow too.
Sure.
So it's
But most of the time on those day games after night games, you wouldn't back that guy up. Because and DH the other catcher that you have, because you don't really have a backup catcher. You don't want Whit Merrifield having to come in the seventh inning.
Right.
That's the point, right? So, I mean, I know you could lose your DH, but it's because he was 3-for-4 with 2 homers, right? Occasionally, he just forces your hand. And, you get the added benefit that he's really good at calling a game.
107 will be the first pitch this afternoon. Yusei Kikuchi against Michael Kopech on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, the Sportsnet Radio Network. And Sportsnet 360 as well. What are you laughing at?
That Mark Boffo has to put that number one sign on that piece of paper just to make you feel good about yourself.
Yeah, I don't get that. I don't get why you're doing that. I got the upraised middle finger you were putting on there. I got that joke.
That's not really a joke. That's like you're number one. Go get them. We have faith in you.
I guess.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know how to take these things. I mean, I just don't know how to take compliments because I'm not used to getting them. Or maybe I don't recognize them when they happen. Could be the
same
thing.
You're so good at your job. You just know it, Jeff. Yeah, nobody has to tell you.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I'm Mr. Self-Confidence here. You always tell me that I should get a job motivational speaking.
A little van down by the river.
Kids, you want to get into media? Two words for you.
Be nice.
Law school.
Be nice.
Joe Kelly is a White Sox reliever, just activated off the IL. He's also an author. Here's the thing, it's interesting. Dudes write books when they leave the game.
Yeah.
You got to have big stones to write a book while you're still in the game.
No question.
And call out some people who are standing at home plate.
I know.
Like,
that's awesome.
It
is awesome.
That's some stones.
Big ones.
Joe Kelly joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your favorite podcast.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to Blair and Barker, the sort of pregame show edition. I mean, I guess it can be a pregame show. It's a 107 first pitch. We're going to be done at noon. And we'll be doing Blue Jays talk tonight and Friday night. I guess it's kind of the regular routine now. We're going to be doing Blue Jays talk weekdays. Yeah.
I don't know what you want me to say.
No, I was trying to think. Oh, yeah, the Houston Astros.
Start the music over.
Yeah, start it over again, Lance. Let's just redo this segment. The Seattle Mariners are in town Friday for a three-game series. Tomorrow, the Jays will have the day off, which will allow everybody to cheer on the Leafs to victory Thursday night. The book Ball 4, written by Jim Boughton, came out. I mean, I can't even remember the year when it came out. Actually, I'm looking. It came out in 1970. I probably didn't read it till 1974 or so. But Jim Boughton was a pitcher who basically spilled the beans and everything that goes on in clubhouses.
Mm-hmm.
The book pissed off an awful lot of people, an awful lot of players. It really hadn't been done before. I mean, it was a look at a major league clubhouse. The guy took notes all year long, wrote a book on it, and he did not spare any details. It has become a classic. And one of the things is, it's one thing for a player to write a book while after their career's over. You see that a lot of times. Mm-hmm. But man, it's another thing to write a book while you're still.
Sure.
While you're still playing, while you're still pitching, in the case of our next guest, Joe Kelly, a reliever with the Chicago White Sox, who, along with Rob Bradford, friend of the show, wrote a book called A Damn Near Perfect Game. And it is a book about baseball. And it, as the title says, a game that sometimes I think we spend too much time poking holes in and not enough time enjoying. And we're very pleased to be joined by Joe Kelly. Joe, thanks for taking time out joining us on a game day. I trust that you're doing well, and it's good to see you. Good to see you off the IL. I just want to ask you about that writing. Like I said, a lot of guys write a book when they quit, but man, writing a book in season. How did you come about? Or I'm sorry, while you're still playing, how did you come about that? And was there any concern on your part that you might end up pissing a few folks off, and you might have to face those people during a game?
That's the whole point, right? I mean, what's up, Jeff? What's up, Kevin? Hey, appreciate coming on the show, man. Sorry about yesterday. I had some things pop up. You know, my wife's
about to
give birth in 4 days to my fourth child. So I'm a very busy man lately. But yeah, I mean, it was the whole thing kind of went down where, I was playing on writing with Rob Bradford, when I was done playing. And then, the lockout came around and I wrote a piece. The LA Times ended up picking up And then Bradford hit me up and was like, hey, man, if you want to write a book now, I think it'd be great because these publishers, you have proof that you can do this thing. Mm-hmm. So I said, screw it. Let's go for it. But it was definitely a fun process. The whole point is to piss people off. I hope if there's people in the book that get pissed off, I hope I get to face them. That just makes for more fun. I've been outspoken my whole career. I haven't changed since day one. So it's kind of one of those things where, people are going to hate you no matter what. I mean, people hate LeBron James, and he's the best player to ever play basketball. So it's just one of those things that you live with, and, you kind of take it with a grain of salt and move forward.
You know, one of the things about the book, though, is like, and it's not all inside stories. I mean, it is about the game. It is about the game of baseball, and a damn near perfect game. Do you think this is going to be an odd question? So I'm going to apologize in advance. Do you think?
Okay.
yeah. Believe me, you may have heard a weirder question.
Ask them all, baby.
All right, man. I'll go. Do ball players? Do enough ball players enjoy playing baseball? I know that sounds dumb, but do enough guys enjoy the game?
No. It's an easy answer. I wish they would, because it would relieve a lot of stress on the guys who, only worry about, making a paycheck or only worrying about, their stats, say they could go 3-for-4 and the team loses. There's just too many guys around the league that are that way. And you're not going to change that. That's just how they were born. That's just how they were raised, or that's just how they play the game. But you do have to find a motivation in people. It's hard because, you got eyes on you every single day. You play a game of baseball and there's critics and there's things like that. But the way that people need to go about it is understand that, that's the whole point. There's going to be people that, think you suck. There's going to be people that think you're overpaid, but just go play the game of baseball and you're end up doing better than you would if you were just worried about all the other outside aspects of it. The book is great, man. I mean, it was one of my favorite things to do. I love going on podcasts. I love talking. I've had numerous people come up to me like, man, you need to do your own podcast. You're so well-spoken. You need to write your own book, da da da. And so with the book, it's got a lot of F words. I don't really have too clean of a mouth. It was a lot of, me doing a lot of talk to text, where those apps go ahead and kind of edit stuff for you, and then I give it to Rob, and Rob would clean it up. But yeah, I mean, it was a fun process, and it's gained a lot of ground. Here's a little bit of inside info. Me and Manfred have obviously, before we sat down and spoke a couple of times, we weren't on the best terms. I've been suspended multiple times from Major League Baseball, we kind of picked each other's brains, and chapter 7 in the book is great. And I think most fans, if they haven't read or want to read, I think if you hate Rod Bradford, you could have a change of heart just like me. I know I have. I believe he's the right guy for the job. But you've seen, I think it came out a month ago where, the Atlantic League in independent baseball is experimenting with a pinch runner, right? So, their rule is where the guy could run, in front of the game. And so this conversation I had with Rob before this rule came out in spring training, I said, Rob, if we start expanding rosters, you want to make the game more fun. We need to have a guy on the roster. His only role is just like a kicker. His only role is to run. So you get to run 3 times a game. You could run in the first, second, and third, and then you just burnt your guy out. Or you could run the 7th, 8th, and 9th. But there should always be a guy on the roster who is just made to run. And bam, what do you know? One conversation that we had behind closed doors now turns into an Atlantic League rule. So there's just little things in the game that I love. I love this game of baseball. Like I said, I'm about to have my 4th kid. I coach. I've watched the game through kids' eyes, parents' eyes, all eyes, and I kind of touch on that in the book. And it's a beautiful game. It's something that, people either love or they hate, or they just won't give it the time of day. But it was just something fun that I wanted to do with Rob Bradford and try to open some eyes to people out there.
Joe, what is your teammates thought about the book? Have they read it? Did you give them a free book? Did you say, go home and read it and tell me what you think? Did they like it? Have they talked smack to you? How's that went?
There's a lot of talking right now because I've only handed out a few books to a few guys, right? And they're like, Joe, I saw you handing books out to blah, blah, blah in spring training. Where's my book? And I told the guys, I've been a bad teammate on that part. At first all, I was trying to get back from a growing injury. So I didn't have time to talk to the publishers, like, hey, send some books and they could do it anytime. But I have books. I'm going back to Arizona May 1st just because my baby, right? My baby boy. And I have tons of books there. So I'm going to pack a suitcase filled with books and the guys can't get shit no more. I'm going to bring them to the clubhouse, and I'm going to put them on the lockers. Like, here you go. Don't bug me again. Here's your book. Go read it. But, yeah, the guys that have read it have thoroughly enjoyed the book. And, you know, it could be a little biased because they are my teammates, and they're like, you know, talking baseball with me, talking shop. The people that I have had come up to me said that they like the book, just fans. You know, that's more important and near and dear to my heart. You know, I appreciate the people that, you know, say that they didn't even like me as a player and then they read the book. You know, I've had that already so far. And they're like, I don't even like you as a player, but I like the book. Now I'm a baseball fan. I'm going to watch you play. I'm like, all right, sweet.
That's awesome. Joe, is there too much on a baseball field, like bat flipping or staring from a pitcher, or, you know, Is there too far? Because I'm pretty far removed from baseball. You know, I don't want to say I was old school, but I came up in that, right? It was, you know, sort of, if you're not Barry Bonds, when you hit a home run, you put your head down, you ran around the bases. It wasn't flipped. And, you know, when you got career 4 or 5 homers, is there too much in your mind somewhere on a baseball field?
If you would have asked me that when I was in college, I would have said yes. If you ask me that now, my perspective has changed, right? That's life, right? Perspective changes. So I coach an 8-9-year-old travel ball team, and you know, those games are intense, and they mean more to me as a coach than anything. And, you know, the whole game, you see, if you go to a kid's game, this is what brings me back to, this is what made me love the game of Major League Baseball even more, just because I remember, I see it through their eyes. So, you know, you got my son starting cheers. You got them talking crap on the team. You know, they got to make a play. And then you got little kids going, he can't throw. He's got a weak arm. Or, you know, he walks them like, don't swing. He can't throw a strike. So, I mean, it's just natural part of the game. And I think we got away from that as we got to Major League Baseball players. It became more of a business, correct? So when I watch it through kids' eyes and then now I see Major League Baseball, it's like, man, we just need to bring it back to, you know, where guys are popping off and getting a little rowdy. You know, if guys want to say something and walk out, then walk out. I think I love that aspect part of the game more. Like I said, just because I see it in the off seasons every single weekend. You know, kids laughing at each other, talking crap, hitting it, you know, dancing when they get to second base. Because ultimately it is still a game. You know, we make millions of dollars and people want us to be serious, but if you want to get the best talent on the field and let guys play loose, I think you could get the best product. And the Jays have a great team, a great young team who understands that, I think. And we've been playing them, and they're a great ball club. They beat us twice. Obviously, we're not playing good baseball, but, man, they got so many young guys, and they're having fun, and they're doing the little things. They're moving guys over. They're driving guys in when they're a guy left on third with less than 2 outs. They're just literally playing, you know, travel ball baseball together as a unit in the big leagues, and watching from the other side, you could definitely tell.
You know, it's interesting hearing you talk about the commissioner and that, and I think that's the part of the book that a lot of people immediately turn to. You know, when the CBA talks were going on, I mean, it was common, Joe, to hear, I was texting with players, and I'd get the response, yeah, I don't even think the dude likes the game. I don't even think Rob Manfred likes the game. I think it's just a job for him. After talking to him and being very candid with him, and him apparently being very candid with you, he likes baseball, doesn't he?
He absolutely does, which I was surprised, right? And it's all about, you know, the word context nowadays. You know, someone says something and they write it up and then you read it, it looks like that's just how it goes. You don't know, you don't see a tone. You don't see there's no like text that means like there's sarcasm. Like there's no sarcasm font. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, when I was going into this, you know, I thought, you know, Rob Manfred was a guy who was like, you know, the World Series trophy is a piece of metal. You know, what makes these guys like so like, you know, insane about a piece of metal? And after talking to him and seeing him, you know, he's from New York, born and raised, diehard baseball fan, loves the game, and talking to him and seeing how witty he was and seeing how quick his remarks were and kind of, you know, that New York style of swag where you're going, you know, I'm looking kind of myself in the mirror where if I was a commissioner and these players are bitching at me, I probably would have said the same as I think. I'm like, guys, literally it is made out of metal. It's a piece of metal. I was talking like I was trolling a little bit. Like why are you guys getting flustered about something? So it's just a little piece of trophy. Like, you know, worry about like, you know, winning the World Series for your teammates. So why do you care about this little piece of metal? So when you take it that kind of aspect and look at it and you see the context of what he was talking about, you know, it makes sense. And then, you know, diving deeper with him and talking about rule changes and why it's good for the game. And, you know, all the rule changes have been great this year, and I'm pretty sure 99% of fans can agree. You know, there's still going to be those guys who are like, oh, it's bad. Like, who doesn't want a faster game with more runs and you know, more guys diving for ground balls this year and you know, more guys stealing who haven't stole. You know, it's one of those things that so far, you know, this year more than ever, I think more people appreciate the commissioner of baseball now more than ever.
You're the perfect person to ask this because the Rogers Center has been reconfigured. They've moved fans closer to the bullpen, all that good stuff. They've opened up areas. They've tried to make it more of a ballpark. The Detroit Tigers, shall we say, did not necessarily enjoy their experience at the Rogers Center with the fans. What's it been like for you guys out there these two nights? Because you're pretty close to them now, and I've got to think that I've got to think that you know you might have spoken to a few people.
Oh yeah, I love it, man. Fan interaction is one of my favorite things to do, and it's good when someone pops off and they don't expect you to pop off back, and then they're embarrassed in front of their friends. So it's good, clean fun. You know, I think that the new renovations here are beautiful. You know, you could ask every single guy in our bullpen. Congratulations, Toronto! You guys have the number one bullpen in the league now. It is insanely great. And, you know, there's an upstairs, there's a downstairs, you're close to the fans. It's just done well. It's just done well. And I think, you know, how fast they did it. We asked that yesterday, like, how the hell did they do this so fast? But no, it's great. And I think any time where you could be close to the fans as a bullpen guy, you know, it makes the games, the ups and downs of the game go on a little bit easier when you could, you know, kind of communicate with the fans.
Yeah, this is the last one before we let you go. And I know I'm only going to ask you this because you are very opinionated and I know I'll get a good answer. But Max Scherzer, suspended for the sticky stuff. Oh, we can call it sticky stuff because that's what the umpires in the league said. And you're very close to this because you're a pitcher and you're still pitching.
Yeah.
What do your peers think of that? And did their mind change of Max? And will that change how they feel of him when his career is over?
No one's minds are going to change about him and his career is over just from that aspect. But, you know, there is a way to get your hand extremely sticky by doing exactly what he said. You know, the whole point of the rule is to not use like anything else except for the rosin bag. But if you sweat and you get a lot and you put that rosin bag on your hand, you know, excessively, it's going to get real sticky. And then the funny thing is if you go get alcohol and clean it off, like in between innings, like the umpires say, your hand actually gets stickier. You know, I've tried it too. The thing that needs to be done is like we need tape remover. Like tape remover doesn't make it sticky, so it gets all the rosin off. And but when the umpire's like go tell you to go do it with alcohol, you're like, okay, I'll go do it with alcohol and I'll come back. But it makes the hand almost even stickier. So it's not like Max is using anything foreign. He was using exactly what MLB gave him. It's just, you know, if you use it excessively, it gets a little bit too sticky. But no, I love Max and I think he's a gamer. I play with him with the Dodgers. You know, I've never seen Max do anything illegal to pitch. You know, if the rule's there, you know, it's like you could use it was there. I think the suspension, you know, I was 50-50 on either side. And I think there needs to be definitely a way to interpret that rule a little bit better so it just doesn't happen again to a big-name guy.
Joe, listen, we really appreciate you joining us today. Thanks so much. Congratulations on the book, and it's good to see you off the IL, man.
Yeah, good luck.
Stay healthy the rest of the way.
All righty, boys.
And congrats on the kids.
Have a good one.
Yeah.
All righty, take care. That's Joe Kelly, relief pitcher of the Chicago White Sox, and we appreciate him joining us. The book is A Damn Near Perfect Game, Reclaiming America's Pastime. And I got to do something now that I've only usually have to do to apologize for my language on a show. There were some words that got out there that we can't delete because they're on TV.
The information was really good.
The information was good.
It was really good.
And I mean, it's we, you know. So anyhow, so I do apologize for those of you who were offended by a couple of words. But hey, man, that's. I was going to say that's live TV. That's live radio.
Well, that sounds like Joe.
It does. Talked to him in the field a little bit yesterday. He was talking about Caleb Joseph hitting a home run off him at Fenway Park. And Caleb actually opened the door to it. But basically, to sort of dumb it down, Caleb hit the ball, and he was staring at the green monster trying to figure out where the ball was going, except he hadn't quite hit it where... And how he thought he hit it. So the ball was actually kind of weakly just inching over the right field foul line.
Yeah.
It was fun hearing Joe Kelly describe it.
That's awesome.
We do appreciate it. Seriously, the book is, you know, I was going to describe it. The book originally kind of developed a bit of a cult following, but it's sold really well. And he and Rob Bradford, Rob's from WEI in Boston. We have him on all the time. They've started this whole baseball isn't boring thing. You can buy their T-shirts, and Rob's got a podcast going. And it really has taken off. And it is interesting hearing Joe speak, because one of the things, and, you know, I mean, look, he calls out Josh Donaldson. He calls out Carlos Correa. He really calls out Josh Donaldson.
Yeah.
I'm not going to use that word, because then I'd have to apologize again, even if I used the unhyphenated version of it. But the book is really, it's really taken off, and it is a good read. And the stuff with the commissioner is you can imagine. Can you imagine as a hockey fan? Pick a player who's been suspended multiple times by Gary Bettman, calling up Gary and saying, you know what? Can I interview you for a book? And that's what Rob Manfred did.
Well, Rob's hit a home run with all the rule changes. He's had a pretty good year.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good offseason.
Our friend David Sampson said, I have no problem with the dude taking a victory lap.
There you go. And he's doing that, and you give him credit for it. He's made the game better, which is the ultimate goal here. I ask him the teammate thing for a reason. I'm not sure, because I haven't really dove into the entire book. Did he say anything about any teammates that he's with now?
Nothing really. Not that I remember.
That would be a sort of an uncomfortable situation, I'm assuming, right? If it, you know, it's
it's obvious. Look, the Carlos Correa thing is no surprise. We've all seen
he's an easy target.
We've all seen the meme of him of Joe Kelly pouting after, I don't know, did he throw at Correa or whatever the hell it was. Yeah. I will say this about Joe Kelly. I mean,
he owns it.
Well, what you see is what you get.
He owns it.
He always has been. And I mean, let's be honest. A couple of years ago, he was filthy.
Well, he still is. I think
he's nasty.
It's just he doesn't really know where it's going. That's been the whole thing, is don't dig in. Like, it's very uncomfortable with bat. You really don't know what you're going to get. Maybe in a year, you might get it down the middle. So it's very hard at bat for, you know, good hitters to have against him. About Max,
we talked about that.
He's been suspended.
I think you heard Joe say. I guarantee you guys have done that.
And I'm sure everybody's done that. Because they knew how to do it.
Yeah.
Max is doing it for a reason.
Now, what kind of...
He said umpires tell him to do it.
Well, now this is what I was... Okay. This is where I was going to go with it. This is where I was going to go with it. If apparently every pitcher in baseball and every hitter in baseball knows that putting alcohol, quote unquote, washing your hands with alcohol only makes it stickier, that kind of puts a different light on.
Yeah.
You told me to do this.
I know it doesn't make it spin anymore. They've proven that.
I don't know.
Well, anyway. So what's it do?
It was funny, by the way. We were talking about that, and, Jeff Passan tweeted out a couple of days ago. Remember, we had the conversation about the tacky ball that they were using in Japan,
sure. Spongy,
and Jeff mentioned that baseball had experimented with it in the minors and they hadn't found one that fit. Well, they were using one in the Southern League AA this year.
Of course they were.
Threw it out. It's gone now. So what? How many weeks into a minor league season? We're talking what? We're talking 3 weeks into. Yeah, they just
poor kids in the minor leagues
because guys had no.
It's like test dummies.
Yeah,
go and do it to the minor leaguers.
Well, and the thing is, you know, the Southern League now you're test dummying it with the Southern League's got
prospects, big ones.
Yeah, guys you don't want.
Know. It's like
wearing it in the year. Anyhow,
I guess.
But that'll be the next technological. Advancement.
Just tell umpires to back off a little. How about that? Be aware of your surroundings. Or just tell one guy, Mr. Cuzzy. He seems to be the only guy that was in that meeting.
I wonder what the response would be if you very quietly put 20 umpires
in
the
room. You know what it would be.
And ask them.
The other 19 didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Joe was saying everybody does it.
But I mean, you know, how would you like to be an umpire? How about if you're on his crew and you're not doing it?
Well, it seems like the other guy that helped, he's about like Phil.
Anyhow.
Like,
That was fun. That was fast.
Yeah. It was.
That is us. That is us.
That is
it for us.
That a way to end it.
That is us. That's all us. It's all us. For all of us here, for all of us here at Blair and Barker, thanks so much for joining us. Don't forget, Kevin and myself will be doing Blue Jays Talk following the game. We'll be back tomorrow. Have yourself a great day.